Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump has been attacking all kinds of institutions in America. He certainly attacked immigrants, the idea of the Statue of Liberty. He's been actually defending neo-Nazis and white supremacists. He has, of course, attacked everyone from John McCain to accusing Ted Cruz's father of somehow being involved in the Kennedy assassination to making up incredible lies about Hillary Clinton. But if there is a bridge too far that our president can cross, I think he finally crossed it last weekend. He attacked football. That's right. An American president attacked the most popular sport in the United States of America. And I think he lost this battle. You tell me what you think. Here we have the president of the United States attacking the protest. Everyone knows that Colin Kaepernick has for, two years now, been kneeling during the national anthem. As a protest for Black Lives Matter, a protest against violence by the police against African Americans. Now, whatever you think of how Colin Kaepernick is expressing his dissent, I don't think you can deny that it's a legitimate issue. Maybe people didn't realize it before the days of iPhones and easy videotapes, videos from phones. But police violence, particularly violence against African-American men in America, is rampant. Case after case, I don't have to name them all for you, whether it's Michael Ferguson or Trayvon Martin or the list goes on and on. We hear every few months that some African-American, usually a man, has been pulled over, unarmed, shot dead without a weapon, and there's case after case of this. Again, I'm not trying to decide who is right or wrong in these individual cases. I think it's fair to say sometimes the person stopped is in the wrong. In most of the cases that we hear, the most egregious cases, we hear about them because it sure seems like the police are in the wrong. And they are seeking out African-American men. We don't see these incidents happening at the same frequency with people of different races and with women, although they do happen. But it seems that there's violence at the drop of a hat, usually against an unarmed person. Oftentimes they are killed, and then also oftentimes the police officer is not convicted of any crime. And that's why cities have erupted from Ferguson, Missouri to, all across the country. The point is this, and we'll talk about the Black Lives Matter protests and why I think it absolutely matters, but Colin Kaepernick, a NFL player of some merit, maybe not the best player in the league, but certainly not the worst, decided that he was going to individually make a statement, and rather than stand up during the national anthem, he was going to kneel. It was a silent protest. People asked him what it was about, and he told people what it was about. And whether or not you agree with how Colin Kaepernick expressed his views, is there anything more American than stating your views and to do it in such actually a dignified fashion, I would argue, because he didn't disrupt someone else's speech. He didn't, which I don't agree with, no matter what that speech is. He didn't, refuse to play. He didn't harm the sport. He didn't not do his job. He simply expressed his disgust or his wish for reform on the issue of racist police violence. Now, many Americans are offended by that protest. They're offended that Colin Kaepernick is not standing for the national anthem. Frankly, I look at something like that and see it as a much more dignified protest than, for example, burning the American flag, which you have a legal right to do. Even Justice Antonin Scalia, with whom I disagreed on virtually everything, recognized that burning the American flag is a First Amendment right. You have the right to express your disgust with our country so much that the Constitution protects your right to even burn the American flag, not someone else's flag, but your own flag. I would never burn an American flag. I can't imagine that circuit. Well, I shouldn't say never. If America became some kind of fascist state, I guess I could consider burning an American flag. But certainly in what I imagine coming up in the future, I can't imagine myself burning an American flag. I think that goes too far. But kneeling during the protest? Think if Colin Kaepernick had, I don't know, appeared on 60 Minutes to talk about the incredible spate of attacks we've had on African-American men by police forces across the country. What would have gotten any likes? I mean, would people have noticed for more than a week? No, instead he's making a silent, consistent protest, and one that has very much gotten into the national debate. Again, you may think kneeling is disrespectful. I'm not asking anyone to kneel. I'm not so sure that I would kneel, but I respect the right of him to do so. And again, it's on a serious issue. So when Donald Trump last Friday calls him a son of a bitch and suggests that he should be fired for expressing his First Amendment rights, and then goes on to say that he dislikes the rules of football because they're so safety conscious, they're so concerned about people getting hurt, that people aren't being bludgeoned anymore, there aren't enough concussions anymore, he wants to see more violence. I guess he would have loved the Roman Colosseum, right? I mean, that's the kind of president we have. I want you to think about how Donald Trump views First Amendment rights. Because it's not like he's opposed to all First Amendment rights. When neo-Nazis came to march in Charlottesville, you may recall Donald Trump defended their right to protest. He said, in fact, they had a permit to do so, and they did. In fact, they sued to get the permit, and the ACLU supported their right to protest. Now, Donald Trump went further. He said there were good people joining that tiki torch mob on the University of Virginia campus, shouting horrific slogans of white supremacy and anti-Semitism. So he not only defended their right to march, he actually defended what they were saying. But he doesn't defend the right of Colin Kaepernick to quietly, without threatening anyone, on one knee, express his disagreement with some real problems we have in America. Now, I'd be curious to hear what you think, but I don't know how that isn't racist. Someone has to explain to me why marching to stop black men from being killed wrongfully by police is somehow less of an American principle than marching for white supremacy and neo-Nazis. And I'm not saying the white supremacists and neo-Nazis don't have the right to march. It disgusts me, but I recognize in our country they have that right. You know, way back in the 70s, in Skokie, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago that has a large proportion of Holocaust survivors, the Nazis marched there too. And again, I think it's disgusting, but not their right to march, the marching itself. And I believe in counter-protests, and we can give a whole long talk, which I've talked about before, about what the police did wrong in Charlottesville and how they need to separate people and so forth. But the First Amendment right to protest, just like the First Amendment freedom of the press, is something that is, I think, one of the great American freedoms, right? They don't have that in dictatorships. And even presidents who, you know, all of our presidents have had disagreements with the press. Certainly President Obama did. President Bush did. None of them challenged the right of the press to report or the right of people to protest. And what did Donald Trump suggest people do? He suggested they boycott football. So not only is he taking a really bad principle, I'm against the right to protest, he's actually suggesting that Americans bail out on the most popular sport in the United States of America and has been the most popular spectator sport for decades, certainly as long as I'm alive. Will Donald Trump kill football? Well, to ask the question is to answer it. Last weekend, virtually every NFL team stood together, arm in arm, linked arm in arm, in response to Donald Trump. It was a beautiful thing. Now, they expressed their views differently because that's what the First Amendment allows. Some teams didn't leave the locker room during the national anthem. Others stood arm in arm, showing respect for the flag, but standing arm in arm to show their support for their colleagues. Some, like Colin Kaepernick, knelt. But all of them, players and owners, stood together as one, virtually all of them, Republicans, Democrats, all saying, we may not agree that Colin Kaepernick should be kneeling, that that should be his response. We may not even agree with his cause, although I certainly am sympathetic to his cause. But we recognize that freedom. Nobody's going to boycott American football. That's also the other thing. If you're going to pick a topic to go after, you know, don't be attacking football. I'm not even a huge football fan. I know most of America is. I'm clueless about a lot of these things. But I recognize that what are you going to attack next? Motherhood? Apple pie? I mean, what is more American than American football? And I dare say that his boycott attempt will fail miserably. And maybe because red America likes football as much as blue America likes football, this is something that can actually bring us together, recognizing that whatever we think of Black Lives Matter, and I do want to talk about that further, but whatever we think about it, we all recognize there's nothing more American than disagreeing respectfully with your own government. Indeed, I would argue that's what makes us American. I'm also going to be talking in the last half hour about health care, about the death of Obamacare, why Graham Cassidy will not succeed, cannot succeed, and all the procedural shenanigans the Republicans are trying to let again. If you want to call in and comment, I always welcome your calls. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about our president's attack on football. You know, of all the things I never thought Donald Trump would do, and I must say, he's broken every record. I mean, I expected him to be crass. I expected him to be misogynistic. I expected him to be racist. I expected him to attack Hillary Clinton and his fellow Republicans. And, you know, I saw all of that beforehand. I expect him to attack immigrants and gay people and whatever. That's expected. Never thought he'd take on football, though. I can't think of anything that is more likely to be counterproductive than attacking the NFL. I mean, don't get me wrong. You can talk about concussions or steroids or things like that. But attacking football, actually encouraging people to boycott it, that's incredible and certainly something that is likely to fail. Reggie, line 3 in Georgia. How are you, sir?
Happy Monday to you, too, Mark Levine. I would just like to know, why is Donald Trump, why is President Donald Trump psychotically obsessed with NFL protests? That he seems to be more intent on going after them than anything else in the world. And you also had Laura Ingraham saying that those exact same NFL football players are but a bunch of mean little punk-ass sons of bitches. Why are they going after these NFL players?
Reggie,
yeah.
I wish I could think of an answer other than racism. I really could. I wish there were an answer that I could think of. But, you know, he defends the right of neo-Nazis to protest. It's not like he's against all protests, right? So he supports the right of white supremacists to protest. I mean, look, First Amendment advocates, I support the right of every American peacefully to protest, no matter what their views are. Some I have more sympathy with. I have a lot more sympathy with Colin Kaepernick. I have a lot of sympathy with Colin Kaepernick. I have no sympathy with the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville. But I do believe that everyone has a legal right to protest. That wasn't his position. His position is, let the Nazis protest. Don't let Colin Kaepernick protest. Fire him. And and I wish I could think of a reason other than race. But I think his base... Anytime you attack, Reggie, I wish I didn't have to say this. Any time you attack black people, his base loves it, right? The people in Alabama, the white people in Alabama that support Donald Trump love that kind of stuff. And so, you know, at least so George Wallace used to do this 50 years ago. From right. George Wallace to Donald Trump, most politicians, including Republican politicians, used euphemisms, right? I mean, Ronald Reagan had his welfare queen, and George Bush Sr. had his Willie Horton ad, and they would each, you know, sort of talk around race, states' rights, things like that.
Right.
But Trump is just openly being racist, and right. I don't know any other thing to say about it other than he thinks that's what his supporters want him to do.
Right. Well, Laura Ingraham attacked him, too.
You know, they're supposedly attacking his patriotism because he doesn't stand up with the flag. And,
right.
and if someone were to say, you know, I am sympathetic with Colin Kaepernick's cause, I believe Black Lives Matter. I believe we need to look into police violence. We need body cameras. We need to look and see whether, you know, black men are disproportionately stopped and killed by police. But I disagree with the way Kaepernick expressed it. I think he should stand it up and you know, maybe give an interview or in another way. That would be a respectful way to say, you know, I don't think you kneel with the flag, but I respect, or even I disagree with Colin Kaepernick's cause. I don't think that blacks are disproportionately harmed by police. But that's not what he's doing, right? He's
right.
saying fire him for expressing his view.
Right.
And you know, including the woman on ESPN, they called him a white supremacist. If Donald Trump wants to know why people are calling him white supremacist,
right.
it's because of actions like these.
Yeah, he's also he also praises NASCAR drivers too.
Right. Now, I don't NASCAR driving is something that, again, I think his base supports. I don't see anything wrong with NASCAR driving, but it is something that, you know, red state voters, rural white voters really, really like. So
right.
I think he's appealing. It's really also amazing because most presidents take their base, some would argue even take their base for granted, and then try to reach across to the middle. Some Democrats, progressives, complained that President Obama was always reaching toward the middle, or Bill Clinton was reaching toward the middle.
Yeah.
Donald Trump rejects the middle. He rejects moderate Republicans, right?
Right.
He wants the Jeff Sessions Republicans. He wants
right.
the George Wallace, formerly Democrats, now Republicans. That's who
yeah.
he's reaching to. And when you start attacking football,
yeah.
I just wonder if that's finally that. I keep waiting for that bridge too far, and I just think that's a bridge too far because, you know, you don't have to be a Democrat or Republican. I mean, vast majority, particularly American men, right? His base is more men than women. They
right.
love football.
Right. I'm surprised that they haven't gone at the end yet. The sports fans, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard for him to do that. You know, Tim Tebow. Gets
yeah.
on his knees too. It's in
right.
prayer.
Right.
I don't know if it's during the national anthem or not, but
right.
I just don't think Donald Trump's going to attack him.
I don't think so either.
The other point that you mentioned, Reggie, in calling in is that we've got real problems. I mean, Puerto Rico is American citizens. Millions of them are without power. Many of them are dying. Some of them are really, really struggling. And it would be nice to have a president that was concerned about those millions of American citizens rather than spending all his time on one football player with, I think, a legitimate gripe and the way he's expressing his legitimate gripe. Anyway, thanks for your call, Reggie. I appreciate it, folks. If you want to join the conversation, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
The voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. Got an exciting little program note. Next Monday, and starting now, next Monday and forever, the podcast Progressive Voices, probably the leading podcast for progressive talk radio hosts in the country, will be carrying the Inside Scoop. Very proud to announce that. Yeah, that's worthy of applause. And you can find that on your computer by going to progressivevoices.com or on iTunes by just searching for Progressive Voices there. Oh, excuse me, the TuneIn app on your phone. Thank you. The TuneIn app on your iPhone or your Android. Still learning all this technology stuff. But there's a number of good hosts there. All the best progressive hosts are there. So, you know, if you need more progressive talk as you're driving to work each day whatever you're doing during the day, you'll want to check that out. So I'm really glad that they're adding the Inside Scoop. Not today, not yet, but next Monday. When Reggie called before the break, Reggie from Georgia, he mentioned something about NASCAR, and I admit, I didn't get his point. I was like, yeah, well, he praised NASCAR, and, you know, lots of red state voters like NASCAR. What I didn't know is how Dale Earnhardt responded. So Donald Trump tweeted this morning, "So proud of NASCAR and its supporters and fans, they won't put up with disrespecting our country or our flag. They said it loud and clear." So you hear what Donald Trump is doing. He is appealing to NASCAR, which he thinks has a lot of support among rural white voters, which it does. And he's saying, get on my side of this discussion. You want to condemn Colin Kaepernick, too. You want to condemn anyone who's protesting, kneeling at the national anthem. You know, come join with me. And, of course, there's a nice racist subtext in that NASCAR supporters are largely white and the football players are largely black. And so he's trying to appeal to them. Well, Dale Earnhardt Jr., probably the most famous NASCAR driver in the United States, had a beautiful response just a few minutes later after Donald Trump's tweet. He wrote, "All Americans are granted rights to peaceful protests. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. JFK," citing John F. Kennedy. Does that give you goosebumps? Here, Dale Earnhardt, the most popular NASCAR driver in the sport that's probably most watched by rural white voters in America, typically a very strong Republican crowd, right? Trump's space. And Dale Earnhardt is defending Colin Kaepernick's right to protest and pointing out, quoting indeed President Kennedy, that if you don't allow peaceful revolution, it makes violent revolution inevitable. God bless you, Dale Earnhardt. That's really beautiful. So thank you, Reggie, for leading me to find that tweet. Actually, leading my producer, Mark Amaldi, to find those tweets. Because what it tells you is, in this whole divided red state, blue state America, there actually are things we agree on. And one of them is our right to protest. So I'm really proud. Doesn't that make you proud to be an American, to hear Dale Earnhardt say that? I love that. It's interesting. One of the few bills I got passed to the General Assembly last year was a bill that I co-sponsored with a Republican about the right to protest, that basically says you can't be sued for exercising your First Amendment rights, and we're going to punish you in Virginia if you do that. And that was a bill that was a left-right alliance because, you know, liberals might want to protest unregulated gun stores, while conservatives might want to protest abortion clinics. And I'm definitely on one side of that issue and another side of the other issue. But I will always defend your right to protest. That wasn't the way Donald Trump saw it, of course. And I actually have the original clip by Donald on Friday when he condemns Colin Kaepernick and, by extension, the entire National Football League. Let's play the clip, Mark.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
He took a lot of joy, of course, in that statement. Bob Costas, if Dale Earnhardt is the king of NASCAR, Bob Costas may be the king of sports reporting. He gave, I think, a very considered response to our president.
Yelling at each other. There is something contagious about divisiveness.
Yeah, and it plays in certain quarters. You stir people's emotions and resentments. That's actually a business plan in certain quarters of the internet or cable television. It's a business plan. And it's the way President Trump, for better or worse, approached his campaign and approaches his presidency. To give him the extreme benefit of the doubt, extreme benefit of the doubt, you'd say he is insensitive to the racial implications to make comments like this at a rally in Alabama. All right. He likes cheap applause lines.
Which has no football team.
And he delivered them. Has no football. Mm-hmm. Unless you
pro
count,
football team.
Yeah. They're rabid football fans right. down there. That's to give him the extreme benefit of the doubt. But do you want a president of the United States who, even if you're giving him the benefit of that doubt, is so tone deaf to the racial implications of this?
Pretty powerful words. Now, Bob Costas gave Donald Trump the extreme benefit of the doubt, pointing out that even with that, he was in the wrong. I don't think we have to give him that extreme benefit of the doubt. Just look at the man's history, right? Donald Trump's father, the first mention we see of Donald Trump or any Trump in the newspaper is when Fred Trump, Donald Trump's father, is arrested at a Ku Klux Klan rally in New York in the 1920s. Then he raises his son to not allow blacks in their rental buildings. Fred Trump is sued for this. Donald Trump is sued for this. Then Donald Trump, again, still a relatively young man, puts out a full-page ad in the New York Times condemning without trial six young black men for committing a rape in Central Park that they didn't commit. And in fact, after serving some time, after being falsely convicted, they were completely exonerated by DNA evidence and let free. Donald Trump, I think, wanted their lynching. This is still as a young man. Then, of course, leading up to his presidential run, he accuses President Obama of not being born in the United States. Now, there are real questions about some people running for president and where they were born. Ted Cruz was born in Canada. John McCain, and I respect John McCain, was born in Panama. Now, you can argue it's the Panama Canal Zone. It was a military base. I get the arguments, but it actually raises a legitimate question of the United States Constitution, which requires only natural-born citizens to run for president. You didn't hear much talk about Ted Cruz and even less talk about John McCain, did you? Now, what did you hear all the time? You heard that Barack Obama was somehow not born in the United States. Now, either there are idiots who don't recognize that Hawaii is a state, or there are people who maybe don't realize that Hawaii became a state in 1959 and Barack Obama was born in 1961. Maybe they don't have their dates right. But even that wasn't the argument. The implication was that our president was born in Kenya. Yeah, he has an African father. He had an African father. He had actually a white mother. Barack Obama is half white. That isn't talked about very much, raised by his white family and grandparents. Why? Where does this accusation come from? Why Obama? Why is Barack Hussein Obama's birthplace challenged in a way that even John McCain and Ted Cruz, for whom you could raise legitimate complaints, are not? And who was the biggest birther? Donald Trump. You may recall he said he had teams down in Hawaii looking at the base at the birth certificate. Of course, there weren't any. He claimed that he had evidence. Of course, he didn't have any. He just made it all up. Now, okay, Donald Trump likes publicity. He made up racist nonsense to get publicity. That's pretty bad. And I can tell you people believed it. I once did a radio show for a Swiss radio program, where I went over to West Virginia, just 2 hours west of where I live, but oh my God, night and day. I went from blue, blue, blue Alexandria to red, 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 small town West Virginia. And I met a woman who, an elderly woman, who was the head of the Republican Party in this small county in West Virginia. And she was a birther. And she believed, she wasn't faking it, she actually believed somehow that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. And one of her sources was Donald Trump. This man has a history of racism, and all of this is before he even runs for office, before he says that Mexicans are rapists, although some he assumes, can't prove it, but assumes are good people. You know, most are rapists, but every now and then I guess a good person slips through. This is before he appoints Jeff Sessions, a man who was considered too racist to become a federal judge. It was rejected by the Senate in the 1980s because he would use the N-word. He would call his black workers boy. Had a whole history of it. And was one of the few people who opposed the Voting Rights Act. I mean, when you people act like any accusation of racism is wrong. And I'll be the first to admit some people, you know, throw around racism too much. But when it comes to Donald Trump, is there really any other conclusion? I know Old Faithful Michael from the Bronx, line three, agrees with me, don't you, Michael?
Hear me?
Yes,
hey,
you're on the air, Michael.
Can you hear me?
I hear you fine. Talk to me. I said, I know you agree with me on this one.
In more ways than one, buddy. And to add more to what you were saying, first off, people on the right got to get a grip. I mean, literally, get a grip on themselves, because Kaepernick and the football players only took a knee, in which, in religious aspects, is genuflecting and a form of respect before the Blessed Tabernacle, or if you're in the Jewish faith, I don't know how they show reverence, but it's nothing.
We kneel on occasion. We don't kneel all the way down except on the high holy days. Actually, we just right between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when actually you do actually kneel.
Okay.
But we bend the knee. But yes, it's absolutely a sign of reverence.
Yeah, I'm speaking here as a Catholic as well. Mm-hmm. So for people getting all bent out of shape of football players taking a knee at the national anthem, it's nothing like some of these white drunk deplorables that tend to moon people and other authorities when they're showing disrespect.
The fans. I mean, hopefully not the players, but the fans. Yes, there are certainly fans, white and black, who get drunk and do disrespectful things at football games. No question about it.
Honestly, Mark, I have not ever seen in my lifetime
a black fan do that.
Person. No.
Okay.
No,
I can't say that I recall one. So fair point. There may be, but you're right. Okay.
But the thing is that I don't think it's the fact of them taking a knee that has Trump and company on the right so upset. But the reason for it, and Kaepernick stated the police brutality, he stated the inequities and injustices that have been left unaccounted for, that why he took a knee. And when you listen to the anthem, or even listen to the Pledge of Allegiance, the one line in the Pledge of Allegiance, liberty and justice for all,
yep,
calls into question for everybody to do some real deep soul searching, that how can you stand and put your hand on your heart and pledge liberty and justice for all when you have a history of and still continue to engage in divisiveness and continue to promote these inequities? Here's a summary, right? When people want to say disrespecting the flag or disrespecting our veterans. First off, disrespecting the flag, let's talk about how some of these right-wingers, how some of these KKKs tore up the flag, spat on the flag, even burned the flag. And as far as disrespecting our military, why don't you talk about when our military comes back, you don't provide them the right jobs, the right housing. You spit
all true
on them.
All true. Or the fact that he attacked John McCain's service, a national war hero from his own party. Well, one thing, Michael, you probably know this, a lot of people don't. The original Pledge of Allegiance did not include the words under God, but did have a different ending. It was actually written by a socialist minister in the 1890s. The original Pledge of Allegiance ended with liberty, justice, and equality for all. The "and equality" was taken out of the current Pledge of Allegiance. Thanks for calling, Michael. I'm going to move on and after the break and talk about health care and the last attempt to end the Affordable Care Act, to kill Obamacare, that is itself dying. 888-488-MARK, if you want to join in, 888-488-6275. Right back, right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levin with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. I do want to talk about health care, and I will certainly talk more about it on Wednesday. But first, I want to play just briefly one more thing that Bob Costas said on this topic that I think is particularly moving.
is that sports and patriotism and the flag have been conflated to such an extent that people can't separate out any nuance. If you go to see Hamilton, which is about the founding of the Republic, no one says, wait a minute, don't raise the curtain until we hear the national anthem. When you went to see Private Ryan, no one said, turn off the projector, Saving Private Ryan. No one said, turn off the projector until we've had the national anthem. It's in sports where this stuff happens. Sometimes movingly, sometimes I'd submit cynically, because wrapping yourself in the flag and honoring the military is something which no one is going to object to. We all respect their sacrifice. We all honor their sacrifice. And yet, what it has come to mean is that the flag is primarily and only about the military. This is no disrespect to the military. It's a huge part of the narrative. But Martin Luther King was a patriot. Susan B. Anthony was a patriot. Dissidents are patriots. School teachers and social workers are patriots. And yet at Yankee Stadium, if we can shift sports, not only do they play the national anthem before the game, but they play God Bless America at the seventh inning stretch 81 times a year at home games. And in every case, they say, please rise as the Yankees honor a military guest. I have no problem with that. I stand every time I'm in the ballpark, no matter what it is, I stand. And I certainly respect the military person they bring out there. But there's never a school teacher. There's never a social worker. Patriotism comes in many forms. And what has happened is that it's been conflated with kind of a bumper sticker kind of flag waving and with the military only, so that people cannot see that in his own way, Colin Kaepernick, however imperfectly, is doing a patriotic thing. And so too are some of these other players.
That's just beautiful. That just says it better than I certainly have this whole hour. Kudos to Bob Costas for expressing that so perfectly. We don't have a lot of time for me to talk about healthcare. I will be talking about it Wednesday, because Friday is the deadline, folks. September 30th, which is the last day of the budget year, the fiscal year in the United States of America and Congress, begins October 1st. This is the last chance the Republicans have to pass a repeal of the Affordable Care Act with just a majority vote. After September 30th, after Saturday, they've got to do things by a 60-vote majority, a filibuster-proof majority, unless they somehow extend this September 30th deadline. So they are rushing quickly. Let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can pack in, get done. It's even harder, of course, in that Saturday, the deadline, September 30th, just happens to be the Jewish holy day of Yom Kippur, when at least some senators won't be able to vote. So they're running out of time, folks. And they're putting together a slapdash thing. This latest, the Graham-Cassidy bill, is designed to take all the taxes from the Affordable Care Act and just throw them at the states. No concern about pre-existing conditions, no concern about people with specific health care needs, no concern about allowing children under 26 to stay on their parents' policies, no concern about preventative medicine or good medicine. Just throw the money at the states, claim it's about health care, and be done with it. And the real purpose, of course, is to cut health care, because Republicans do not believe that health care is a human right. They think that rich people should get health care and poor people should die, or at least use the emergency rooms, which happen to be more expensive, by the way, than preventative care. The holdouts, of course, are not just John McCain, that thinks things should go through the regular order. Again, God bless John McCain. I don't always agree with him, but he's been dead right on this. He understands that you need a bill with strong Democratic and Republican support if it's going to last for decades. But there are also holdouts of Susan Collins in Maine and Murkowski in Alaska. And so now the Republicans are throwing a whole bunch of pork. Let's give Maine a special exemption. Let's give Alaska a special exemption. Let's get Collins and Murkowski with this pork to join in. Awfully cynical. I don't think it's going to work. But we will talk more about it on Wednesday as the debate heats up. This is their last chance. And it's our last chance, too. Don't give up the fight until it's over. You never know what's going to happen. Call that Capitol switchboard in Washington, D.C., and ask your senator to stand up for the Affordable Care Act and oppose this latest attempt. This is Mark Levine. See you on Wednesday.